Hi, I'm Amy Irvine, founder of Rooted Planning Group, and this is Money Roots, a podcast where my team and I explore the real conversations behind financial planning. Because life is about events supported by your dollars and cents. Let's get started.
Hello, Money Root listeners. Amy Irvine, CEO and founder here of Rooted Planning Group. I have an episode that is near and dear to a lot of our clients that have kids going off to college here in August. Even if it's not your first year of college, this is a year where there is some significant impact to borrowing, to some caps that have been put in place, a lot of changes that have happened or will be happening effective July 1st of 2026. So I want to walk down through a couple of things. If this isn't your first year, you may know some of this, but if it is your first year, this is also a good review, but if it is your first year, here's some resources that you can go to. And of course, we're here to help if you're a client of ours. So one of the things that I wanted to touch base on is what's called the real cost of college. There's actually a fantastic website that's available called College Navigator. It's through the National Center for Educational Statistics. It actually gives you a ton of information about the various colleges that are out there, including the tuition fees, estimated out-of-pocket costs, on-campus living, off-campus living. It gives you all of that information in a nice summarized chart, and it'll give you for the next the prior 4 years, so you can kind of see what the trends have been and what the cost increases have been. So you can plan on some of that information when you're calculating out what you are actually going to be eligible for. It also has a multi-tuition calculator, so it'll estimate it going forward. They also show information for things like alternative tuition plan and funding programs, such as how to fund the cost of it. The net price is something that I think is really interesting for people to explore. It's one of the options that's listed there, and it actually breaks down the cost to the student based on the income of the household. So, for example, I happen to pull up St. Bonaventure as an example, and it's showing for 2023-2024 academic year, if your income was between $0 and $30,000, then the net price for the household for the student would be around $15,651 per year, all the way up to $110,000 of average income household income or more. Then the net price for the student would be around $30,441 per year. Now, this is before any academic scholarships or athletic scholarships or anything like that, but it's giving you some indication of what your net price is going to be. One of the other things that I think is interesting is to look at the retention and graduation rates of the various colleges that you're looking at, because ultimately you want to walk away with some sort of degree if you're going to invest in yourself that much. The website has for each of the colleges the first to second year retention rate. So for example, St. Bonaventure has a 86% retention rate from the first to second year, all the way down to overall graduation and or transfer out rates. Now, example here is 67% was overall graduation, but 26 also transferred out. So if you look at the sum of the two, then you'd be looking at it saying, okay, well, 93% either graduated or transfer out, meaning 7% didn't continue on for some reason. It further goes on to give you graduation rates for students with a bachelor's degree and how long it took to get that bachelor's degree. So that's of interest, of course, because, you know, you're on the hook for the number of years of college that it takes to graduate. In this case, showing what it takes for 4, 6, and yes, up to 8 years for actual graduation. And how long on average is it going to cost you, those net costs that comes into play. Ideally, you want a 4-year bachelor's degree graduation rate, not an 8-year bachelor's graduation rate, simply for the cost. Interestingly enough, it also shows the difference between, for the 6-year, the difference between male and female. It's about the same for St. Bonaventure, but other schools may have various rates in there. I think one other area that's very interesting to explore is outcome measurements and how many of the students that are first-time degree seekers receive their bachelor's degree within a reasonable amount of time. This is something I think is very important because is you're planning to pay for college, most people go into it planning to pay for 4, not 6 years. Very big difference between all of those costs. But if you are looking at various schools, you want to see what the net cost is. I'll put this link in the show notes so you can dig into each of them and see what the information is. Now, another thing that I think is really important to be talking about is how much students can borrow and how much parents can borrow, how some changes have actually happened or effective this year, July 1st. So for anybody that's borrowing for August, or I should say the first semester of 2026-2027 school year. In the past, this has been true, undergrads could borrow $27,000 over 4 years. So the first year, it's $5,500 split between the two semesters. So first semester, fall semester is $2,750, and then the second semester is $2,750. So you're splitting the $5,500 between the two semesters. That's for the first year. Then the second year goes up to $6,500. So again, you're splitting between the two semesters, $3,250 and $3,250. And then that's for the sophomore year. And then for the next 2 years, you're at $7,500 each year. And that's $3,750 per semester for the last 2 years. That all adds up to a total of $27,000. That's what the student can borrow if they're looking for a government loan. They could always go to outside private loans. But if they're looking for a government loan, that's how much they can borrow. And that's just for the student. If the cost is greater than that, then it usually rolls to the parent. And in the past, parents could take PLUS loans to cover the difference. But now PLUS loans are limited to $20,000 per year, so $10,000 per semester, for a total of $65,000 per student maximum. So that's lifetime, $65,000 per student. So I just want to set an example. For first year of college, if you're looking at your responsibility being $30,000, by yours, I mean students and the parents' responsibility, saying $35,000. Then the student through a government loan can cover $5,500 and the parent through a PLUS loan can cover $20,000. So you're still at a slight gap in that situation of, you know, around $4,500. You can arrange to have a payment plan with the college. You could also go take a private loan if you wanted to do something like, you know, if you wanted to borrow for it. You could also do it. It's not one of my favorite, but you can also do a home equity loan potentially as an option. Those are ways to help subsidize it. Also, of course, 529 funds could help offset that if you have any 529 savings. But that would be your gap for the first year as an example. So you get the notice that you're accepted. You get the bill that shows the breakdown of the various ways to pay for college. And the reason I say that the ways to pay for college is because often when you get that award letter, there may be something in there about, hey, we'll cover this due to academic scholarship or athletic scholarship, mostly academic. And based on your income, you may be eligible for Pell and TAP if your income is low enough. But most of the award letters that we see say that the financial aid is through student loans and PLUS loans. Those are not truly scholarships. They're They're not grants. They are loans that you have to start repaying upon graduation. It's possible that you might get awarded some work study as well, but there is a number usually thrown in there that is through unsubsidized Stafford loans that you will have to repay, and then the PLUS loans as well. So if you were laying out a side-by-side of all the schools, it's important to then look at all of these items and see if one is willing to provide you more in true grants and or scholarships versus in any kind of lending option. I think it's really important to understand, this is my two cents, I think it's really important to understand that these student loans come with multiple costs associated with them. There is the origination cost associated with student loans. So when you, as an example, take out a student loan as the student, you think you're taking out a loan for, as you know, for $5,500 if you think about the first year. But in reality, there is a portion of that that goes towards origination. So it's based on, basically it looks, it's around a little over 4% is the origination loan for a unsubsidized loan. And you know, if you looked at a $5,500 loan and you said, okay, I'm going to get, for easy math, let's just say 93% of that loan, 95% of that loan is going to go to the college and the other is going to go towards the origination fee. So you never see that money, but you have to pay back that money. Again, I just want to explain that is something that a lot of people don't understand. If you were to look at a $5,500 loan, that means that $232 is going to go as part of the origination fee. You're never going to see that. So $5,300-ish is going to go to the college, just 53, not the full 5,500, but you have to pay back the 5,500. A lot of people don't understand that when they're borrowing the money. And then when you look at a PLUS loan origination fee, so for parents, when you're looking at a PLUS loan, you're also going to be looking at a 4.228%, as I mentioned, very similar. So if you were taking out a $10,000 PLUS loan, the origination fee is going to be $422.80. So $9,577 is actually going to go towards the cost of the education expense. Again, most people don't understand that. Each year, the interest rates are set on student loans. So you may have multiple rates for student loans. They're set effective each July. So for each student, you're going to want to be looking at what the different rates are for the different years that you're borrowing. So for example, July 1st of 2025 to June 30th of 2026, the unsubsidized student loans were 6.39%. The PLUS loans were 8.94%. Pretty significant loan rates, in my opinion. You can go get private student loan rates potentially for lower than that in some cases. And it's good to do some research and understand what rates you'd be eligible for. For the student, they would definitely need a cosigner to get that private student loan. It's a good way for them to build their credit score, I suppose. So if the rate was lower, that might be advantageous. One of the reasons people used to go after these government loans was because of public service loan forgiveness options, although many of those have been, and I won't even get into that today because it's too long to even discuss that as part of this podcast. But that a lot of that has gone away as a benefit, at least under the current administration. That could change going forward, of course. One of the other key components in the borrowing side of things are obviously how much will the repayment be? What's the interest rate? What's the payment going to be once graduation happens, including the interest? Because that does accumulate, even if you're not making payments along the way. The interest continues to accumulate and add to the loan. So, for example, if a student does take out $27,000 in student loan debt, by the time they graduate, they're going to owe more than $27,000 at that time because interest has not only continued to accrue, but add on to the base of the loan. again, that's not something that a lot of people are familiar with, and they're sort of shocked by it when they get to the time that they have to start making payments. We encourage people to investigate, what will you walk away? Like, what is your first job going to pay? How much of a salary would you expect to be paid in that first year based on the curriculum that you're pursuing? And when you look at that, let's say that your first year of employment is around $80,000. That's what you're going to get paid for your first year. Well, if you look at a loan, let's say you're lucky enough to only owe $27,000, and let's say the interest rate is 6%. If you elect a 10-year repayment schedule, which is the standard schedule. So you have to pay it back within 10 years. Let's say the math could be different because interest rates could be differently, but let's just say that $27,000 student loan grows to $29,000. And again, you're coming in somewhere around 6.8% for an average interest rate, and you have to repay within 10 years. That means that the payment would be $333.73 per month. So if you think of an $80,000 a year job, and again, we say, you know, plan on, of course, we want people to save for retirement, all of that sort of thing, but plan on only bringing home about 65% of that. That's about $52,000 per year. If you divide that by 26, that's about $2,000 per pay. If you then take that student loan payment and you divide that by the $2,000 per pay, or $4,000 typically per month, you'd have a couple extra months in there. It's about 8% of your income. So somewhere around 8 to 10% of your income is going to go towards the cost of that student loan for 10 years. Now, you can extend that, but understand the amount that you repay will be much higher, even on that 10-year repayment plan. If you were to walk away with $29,000 and you had interest rate of 6.8%, you're ultimately going to be repaying $40,000. So trying to keep that payment under 10% is ideal. Not always an option, but it's a target, I think, that you should be considering and looking to try to achieve. I hope this, I know it seems a little probably depressing, all of this information, but I hope that at least the facts are helpful and it helps you compare the college offers that are out there so that you know what you're going to be expecting once graduation happens. And I think it's really critical to sit down and have this discussion as a family, because we're asking our young adults to make really big financial decisions at the age of 18. And they don't always understand what that means in the future, because nobody ever they talk about the loan amounts, but they're not talking about the repayment amounts the first year. Job expectations. It's a big decision, and we shouldn't burden them with a lot of debt without them knowing what they're getting themselves into going forward. So college is one of the most, it's probably the biggest financial decision a young adult will make besides buying a house later in life, at least in a lump sum idea, you know, lump sum concept. The goal is not to put them in a financial deficit so severe right out of college that they feel like they are restricted in some of the options that they have available to them. Again, we hope that you found this helpful. Please share this with your family and friends that might be impacted by this. And if you have any additional questions, let us know, and we will be glad to have additional podcasts about this topic. Thank you, everyone. And we hope that if you are being affected by this, that this is a time of celebration, but also of clarifying information.
That's it for today's episode of Money Roots. I'm Amy Irvine from Rooted Planning Group. If you found this conversation helpful, we'd love for you to share the podcast with a friend, family member, or colleague who might enjoy it too. And if there's a financial question on your mind, send it in. Your question could be the topic of a future episode, because at the end of the day, life is about events supported by your dollars and cents. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Money Roots.